Warning, the following presentation is for mature audiences only. It is not intended for children, the oversensitive, or self-righteous gas bags with sticks up their butts.
This project is extremely dangerous.
It's because I blew it out of the goddamn airlock.
You're listening to the Guardians of the Geekery podcast, featuring Matt Starnslord, Carol the Cat, the Giddy Geeker, and Tiffany the Technician.
People assume that time is a strict progression of cause to effect, but actually, from a non-linear, non-subjective viewpoint, it's more like a big ball of wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey stuff.
And now, damn right they shot first, the hosts of Guardians of the Geek.
Come on.
Were you saying about licking and twisting it, John?
Fuck yeah, dude.
Look, I'm fat, ugly, and old. I got to go with your strengths.
Episode
right there with you.
198.
Woohoo.
We are
recording.
Yeah. We are recording.
Are we recording? Sure. Yeah. Are we recording?
We're recording, Carol. Put your phone down.
I'm putting my phone down. One moment.
Stop
Thank
texting.
You. Sorry.
I don't know who you are, stop texting Carol during the show.
Why would I be sending dick pics?
Well, you know.
Be like, look at what this guy sent me.
Did you see the thing on Facebook where the woman got the dick pics and sent it to the dude's mom?
Yes.
I love that. Oh.
Unsolicited. They were unsolicited dick pics. So.
That's just what should happen.
Yeah.
I used to do a Wednesday night hump day show on the internet long, long time ago when I worked for freakradio.net, and we had the cock files where people would send pictures of their dick pics and I would let them know whether that's going to help or hurt their cause.
So they would send pictures of their dick pics. So they would like take a picture of their camera with the dick pic on the phone.
No, so in those days we actually would do it live with Instant Messenger and Yahoo and stuff like that.
Fax you my dick pic.
I was going somewhere different. I was like, we're about the same age. I was like, so it was a original printing press. We had
etching,
to get the typeface.
Yeah.
Old school internet porn with gray scale. It's going down and down and down.
No.
Carved in stone.
This was not that long ago.
No, you carve stone with it if it's really good.
Yeah. So it wasn't that long ago. It was the late 90s. But anyway, two pieces of advice. Number one, sending a dick pic with your wedding ring still on, not helpful.
And number two, if your wedding ring fits on your dick, you either have fucked up fingers or a bad day.
Okay. Wow. Now, see, you rabbit trailed me because there was a guy that had this
a word for that?
Whole gallery.
I mean, I got some sausage fingers, but no, it's not as big as my sausage.
So there was this one guy who had a whole gallery of how he would show you that his dick didn't fit into toilet paper tubes. Like the inside of the toilet paper tube, which
that's
impressive. Number one, what caused that? So you're sitting on the toilet one day and you're running out of toilet paper,
and you're like,
and it wasn't like just one picture where he was just proving a point. It was like multiple pictures in a picture gallery that he would link to, and you could tell it was different bathrooms because there was different tile on the floor. And I was
but I can totally see somebody just hearing, honey, can you bring me a roll of toilet paper? And just walking in, fucking starkers with a boner and toilet paper hanging off your dick.
You know men.
But this is just like the core.
Yeah.
This is the little brown core.
Yeah.
And I was like,
but yeah,
first of all,
he's sitting on the toilet. He runs out of toilet paper and he immediately thinks, I could put my dick in that. That's guys.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah,
but nevertheless, for a girl, not a turn on.
No, well.
And the other thing, if it's not straight and it's not upward at a pleasing angle, not helpful. So anyway, John Hartness is on our show today.
So immediately we're talking about dick pics.
I just loved your expression as we're looking at it. So, so that was part of what I used to do. Plus, I used to do the fake orgasm test if you could fake your orgasm or not. I would let you know. So anyway,
Anyway, no.
Moving right along. How are you doing, John?
Doing great. Never
tried. We're going to get tons of listeners for whatever you're going to talk about now, because they're going to get halfway through that toilet paper dick conversation, and they're going to go, this is not the podcast
for me.
I had
an ex-employee send me an unsolicited dick pic by accident.
Oh.
Because I'm guessing that I'm not the only John that he knows in his life. And so he sent me a dick pic, and then I hadn't seen that message on my phone, but like 3 hours later, I get a text that says, please delete the last message I sent you. And I was like, well, I just picked up a... Oh, my goodness.
But you can't.
Damn, son.
Not what you wanted. That makes for an awkward next day.
This was long after it's I left that company. It was fine.
Oh, okay.
I haven't seen this guy in years.
He confused hardness with hardness.
Maybe, it happens all the time.
Maybe he didn't confuse it so much. I'm just saying.
Oh. I was not confused. Impressed, not confused.
All right.
Jesus, yeah. You're a fucking tripod.
Could he fit it inside our toilet paper roll?
I think it might take a roll and a half.
Maybe a paper towel.
Yeah, okay, yeah, it's like one of those Charmin super rolls or something.
I don't know. Charmin's known for being soft, though. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
They have the ultra strong, too. Yeah.
It's like when you start using IT metaphors for sex. You don't want to be talking about somebody's floppy drive, let me just say.
Yeah.
No. Their RAM, yes. Floppy drive, no.
Zip drive, bad.
Bad. Is that the Frank or the beans, my friend? Something about Mary. All right, so John, what's going on in your life? I think we tried to do this. We evidently just can't get away from the smut talk, and I would like to point out for the record, I'm drinking coffee, not beer this time.
And for the record, I am stone cold sober because we're not at a con, so I don't have a flask at my booth.
And you have to drive home because you ain't staying here.
Because I ain't staying here. Yeah, you know, just released a new book yesterday.
Woohoo!
Whoa! All right.
The newest Bubba the Monster Hunter novella called Hot Blooded is now available exclusively on Amazon and also available in paperback.
Woohoo!
So that is the third out of a 4 novella series when Bubba goes to Fairyland in search of his kidnapped sister.
So you send a lot of your characters to Fairyland.
Well, they start off in Charlotte, which is the Queen City.
Yeah.
If you're in the Queen City, it's not much of a stretch to go to Fairyland.
Black Knight Chronicles, they go to Fairyland.
So except for book 6, they go to Fairyland in every even-numbered book.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, I love the fact that, you know, the glitter kind of sticks with him afterwards, and he's like, God damn it. Anyway. Well,
that's just glitter. That's that's ask any burlesque dancer, how do you wash glitter off? You don't. You burn down your house and move, and the glitter moves with you.
It's the herpes of the craft world.
That's right, yes.
A friend of mine did a show where she was dancing in a theater show, and she's a woman of some development, shall we say. In other words, she ain't seen her feet standing up since she was 12.
She's got big tits.
And she cannot lie.
Great tracts of land.
Huge tracts of land.
Dolly and Parton.
So she was supposed to have glitter on, a little bit of dusting of glitter on her chest before she started the show.
Yeah.
But she forgot. And she came off stage after her first dance number and went to her friend who was doing the makeup. And she said, I forgot my glitter. And he gets the little tube of glitter, and he goes to sprinkle a little on her, and the top flies off.
Oh.
And she said, it looked like I had Colossus's tits. I swear to God.
Wow.
I walked out, and it was like mirror balls.
Oh, my God. Well, I remember somebody did that to Rich Siegfried at Congregate last year.
It was a couple years ago.
Yeah, he had been up on stage for a little bit, so he had a little bit of the stage glistening, and somebody just smeared it across his head, and he couldn't get it off for the rest of the con. We were finding glitter in his, and he has a large forehead at this point in his life. So
it's more like a 5.5 head at this point.
Yeah. And so there was a lot of glitter, and it was Sunday morning brunch, and we were like,
you're picking glitter out of his beard. He's like, you just got a little glitter right there.
And he's like, yeah, that's like not even close. So Anyway, so new book. And you were recently mentioned on The View.
I was. Back in December, my series, Quincy Harker, which you guys kindly reviewed last week.
And yes, you still showed up this
and
week.
And I still showed up. Thank you. I stopped listening to the episode when you got to the points that you didn't like. I was like, I like these people, so fuck that noise. I want to continue to listen to them.
My mine was just the typo, which we had already talked about, because I had an earlier edition. So there was nothing bad.
And I think, and Carol was actually really astute in that the tone and pacing of that fourth book in the novella was very different. Mm. And it actually is, I was kind of finding my way as I was creating the character in the series. So the fourth one, that slower, more deliberate pacing is more like what the subsequent seasons have been. More action, but a little more deliberate in the pacing.
Yeah, I was actually fine with the pacing. It just seemed like it was like, oh gosh, that was a shift.
Yeah, it was very much a shift. And the fourth novella leads into what has become hell, a 3-year story arc. The first three were very much monster of the week kind of episodes. And then the fourth one, I was like, okay, I got a jumping off point now. And then season two was a whole, it was basically just a serialized novel. And now seasons three and moving into four are, again, two big-ass serialized novels.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah, what you saw there in the shift in the fourth novella was exactly true, that I kind of figured out where the character was and who he was, and I wanted to punch up the horror aspect that you guys mentioned in the fourth one and push some envelopes, you know?
Yeah.
We recently lost Jack Ketchum, who was one of the gods of horror, and he was really a legendary envelope pusher and a big influence on that aspect of my writing. So there was a little, there was a lot more Ketchum in that fourth book than in any of the others.
Yes.
Cool. Yeah, I think for me it was like, because I am a faster reader, to go through the first three and then hit that pacing wall. And to have, you know, the fact that there was literally like double layers of booties does not withstand the blood that was in that episode.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was just a little bit like, okay, this is one to finish tomorrow. Because Joey can't even get through more than one episode of Supernatural or Westworld at a time.
Oh, my.
Without a little happy trailer in between. So.
And yeah, that was some straight up Criminal Minds shit.
Yeah, it was. It was. But no, still good. Just different.
Yeah.
And so therefore you have to pace differently. So
absolutely,
as a speed reader,
now
I know.
Picks in the fourth one, I thought.
Yeah.
Maybe season three or four, five. I don't.
So yeah, Whoopi Goldberg is a fan of the Quincy Harker series.
Although you didn't believe it at first.
I didn't. When she first reached out to me, she sent me an email. And I'm sitting there and an email flashes across my screen and it says it's from Whoopi Goldberg. And what's my immediate thought is,
bullshit.
Exactly. I thought, yeah, that's bullshit. I thought it was one of my magic buddies fucking with me. And then I respond because, you know, even Ivory's only 99.44 100% pure. So there's half a percent chance or so that this is really Whoopi Goldberg. So I respond just like it's real. And she replies back. And the first line in the response is, wow, I'm surprised you answer your own email. And I look at my computer screen and say, you've obviously never communicated with a Midlist fantasy writer.
Well, maybe she didn't consider you Midlist in her book. Obviously not.
She did not know exactly how small potatoes I am.
And we like to keep it that way.
And then, you know, we corresponded a little. And yeah, I asked for proof of life.
Politely,
did
though.
You,
I did.
Did you ask for like an unsolicited book pick or something? Hold my book? Solicited book pick.
Well, I asked. First off, I asked her to send me a picture of her or something to show that she it was really her. And she sent me a video from her backstage at The View saying, hi, John, it's Whoop. And I was like, shit, that's really her, because she said my name and wow.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was really her. And then when I was releasing season three of the Harker series, I emailed her and said, hey, can I get a cover blurb? And maybe if you've got any ideas to help promote the series, I'd really appreciate any social media love or any of that. And she wrote me back and said, well, how about I just put the books on the show? And fortunately, all of this is going on over email, so I have time to get up and run around the living room a couple of times and scare the cat and the wife and go back and very calmly then type out my
response. In that order.
Yes, please. Yeah, well, the cat's way more easily scared than the wife. She's used to this shit by now. So, yeah, she featured the Quincy Harker series on The View as one of her top holiday picks under $50. And I was really blown away. And, you know, my dad watched The View for the first time in his life outside of a doctor's waiting room. And my brother DVR'd it. And he's like,
aww.
I sent it out to everybody in my office. I sent a link.
Yeah,
and I was like, this is my friend. Like, we go and eat together at cons. He's been to my house.
I've seen this dude drunk.
Many, many, many times.
No. Time.
That's really not true. No. Typically, you're not the drunkest person in the room, nor am I. Very rarely is it Carol. But anyway, moving on.
Well...
If she starts letting you throw pizza at her, then yeah.
Anyway. If I start trying to light the fireball on fire,
the fireball should light on fire in real theory. Anyway,
no.
Yeah,
so you know why I keep interrupting you? Because you and my husband over here kept this whole "I am talking to Whoopi Goldberg" thing a secret for a frickin' year.
Yeah.
You told him not to tell anyone.
I didn't tell anybody.
And he didn't tell anybody, not even me, his beloved newlywed, by the way, wife.
That's a good man right there.
Yeah.
I have concerns now. This whole bros before Joe's thing not working for me.
I think it just had been, so it was a Charlotte Comic Con, and you said, you can't tell anybody, and you told me the story, and I was like, oh my God, that's great, John. You know,
yeah.
And he's like, you can't tell anybody. He's like, okay. And you weren't at that con.
Right. I was not feeling well.
Yeah, yeah. So I was like, well, I'll tell her. And you know, like how it is sometimes, though. It's like, oh, I'll tell her. And I was eventually.
No, I don't know what that's like.
Then I kind of forgot. Then occasionally I would be like, I wonder if he's heard from Whoopi.
So, Matt, you haven't told her about my 3-picture deal with Steven Spielberg, have you?
Shh.
Oh.
Carol.
Oops-a-daisy.
I think she'd be more pissed off at you than me. Sometimes.
Just for the record, that's 3-picture. Like, she's got 3 autographed
pictures
of Steven Spielberg.
I was like, are we harking back to the dick pics already?
I own 3 of his movies.
They're all E.T.
Yeah, exactly.
You've got
E.T. Special Edition.
Special Edition VHS.
Where you remove the guns and put the little walkie-talkies.
An Atari 2600 cartridge. Just for
yeah.
So that's awesome that Whoopi loves your books.
Yes.
It's been pretty awesome. And, you know, it was really surreal to see my work featured on network television in front of 3 million people.
And to have 200... audience members
walk out with a copy. That was very cool, and I got a nice sales bump from the exposure. And then they reran the episode the week after Christmas.
Cool.
So that kind of reignited some sales, which was great.
Oh wow!
And
so
now,
not only were you on an episode of The View, you were on a repeatable episode of The View.
Yeah, because the segment that they did do those gift specials on, they tape that separately from the live segments of the show, so they can actually drop that in when, and it's on their YouTube channel and things like that.
Oh man! Yes.
Because they taped the gift idea episode 3 days before it aired, and you know my books aren't exactly Peanuts covers, they're kind of dark looking.
Yeah, they are. Yeah.
Right. I mean, they've got
big pentagrams.
Yeah.
Book 3 has a giant flaming demon on the cover. So I was waiting up until the minute it aired and I saw my book covers on the screen. I was just waiting for a producer to email me and say, yeah, I'm sorry, bro. We're sending these back to you. We can't put this shit on network TV.
Merry Christmas. Here's a demon.
Yeah, exactly. And a friend of mine his biggest thrill is that 3 million soccer moms in middle America had a demon face and a title Damnation on their 46-inch TV screens the week before Christmas.
I think it's awesome.
But yeah, it's been very cool. It's awfully neat, you know, to think that somebody who is a legit A-list, one of only 12 people in the world to hit the Grand Slam of Acting Awards, the Emmy, Grammy, Oscar, and Tony. There's only 12 people that have ever won all four of those at one time. And she's a fan of my work.
And she's no slouch. I mean, she's not a slouch at all.
Oh, no.
She's like a hardworking person out there.
I mean, she shoots The View 5 days a week, and then some weekends she does guest spots on Blue Bloods. So she's got two network TV shows going. She executive produced a series for Amazon, and she's executive produced another series that's going. She's written children's books. Yeah, no.
I mean, she's a hard worker.
And she's a super geek. I mean, super geek.
I mean, let's face it. She was on Star Trek.
Well, yeah. And she asked to be on Star Trek.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And her character on Star Trek was amazing.
Yeah.
And like, that whole thing started because she was talking to LeVar Burton before the show started, before Next Gen started happening, and said, I want to be on the show. Tell them I want to be on the show. And this was back when movie stars didn't do TV.
Right.
So kind of nobody believed her. So she got, the next time she saw LeVar Burton, she said, hey, call him up. I want to be on the show. No, call him right now. And she got on the phone with Gene Roddenberry because he answered the phone back then at the production office. And she asked to be on the show. And he's like, whatever. She's like, no, really, I want to be on the show. Because before Gene Roddenberry, there were no black people in the future.
Right.
Right. Nichelle Nichols was...
was the first African-American character on a sci-fi show. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Whoopi wanted to be part of that legacy, and she was. And now she's a very important part of that legacy.
One of my favorite Star Trek Next Generation episodes is the episodes where a lot of those adult characters become kids for a while and are trying to figure out how to get back. And the little girl dressed as Whoopi's character running around, but being like 8 years old with that big hat piece on. And, you know, and then talking the way that Whoopi's character talked just cracked me up. I just loved it.
I bet. I've never seen that episode, so.
I will look it up. My friend Chris Jones will tell me what the episode number was, and I'll let you know. But
I think all those episodes are on Netflix now.
Yeah, but I'll tell you. I'll point you to the one. But anyway, it was just awesome. So.
The name of it was like right on the tip of my brain, and now it's gone, and I can't remember what it is now.
It was great. So.
Yeah, so that happened. That was cool. It was a good way to close out 2017 with having my shit on network TV.
Yeah. That should happen more often.
I agree. Yes. I have lots of intellectual property. Anybody who wants to feature my stuff on, even, you know, like CW, little networks is fine. It doesn't have to be.
CW is not such a little network in the sci-fi world anymore.
No.
It's awesome.
I was just watching Black Lightning today.
What did you think?
I love Black Lightning.
Okay. I have not had a chance to watch it, but I was able to listen to the podcast with Nerdist podcast with Cress Williams, the lead character. Mm-hmm. Who was Scooter on In Living Color, which loved Scooter.
Wow.
Loved Scooter. He was Queen Latifah's love interest.
I had no idea he was on that show.
Yeah. It's awesome.
I love that show. And I think right now Black Panther's getting all of the attention for being the first big budget Marvel superhero with an African-American lead character. And rightfully so. That movie looks amazing. But Black Lightning's tackling some important shit.
Yeah, that's what they were talking about. And the fact that it is about a guy who doesn't necessarily have superpowers, and that he is one of us, you know, a 40-something doing, you know, and when he gets shot, he bleeds. He doesn't magically heal with fairy dust.
Which, for the record, if they can do all the other cool shit with that suit, they ought to make build it out of Kevlar. I mean, come on, kids.
Yeah.
That's not new tech. But, yeah, no, I think Black Lightning is I think it's really well acted. I think it's well written. And I think it's important. Mm-hmm. I think it's socially very aware. And CW has a history of doing that.
Yeah.
But they're not fucking around.
Yeah, this is a much different world. And they were talking about, well, you know, technically, Black Knight Lightning's in the same world as Flash and Superman and all that stuff. And he's like, yeah, I film in Atlanta. They film in Toronto. He goes, that's probably not going to be happening. And he goes, and my world's a little bit darker than theirs. Yeah. He goes, because they're saving the world and he's saving the hood. Yeah. You know? So,
but I could see, but tonally, it's not that far from Arrow.
Right. Especially right. He said it would be hard to do a Flash crossover. Probably Arrow's the closest to what he would do.
Yeah, 100%.
But, you know, he's saving his world, not the world.
Yeah.
So.
No, I love that show. I think that it's fantastic. I think the acting's great. The soundtrack's great.
Yeah. I'm excited that they're close to Atlanta. I'm hoping that maybe I could find out how to invite them to the Geek Gal. Because that's where my mind always goes to.
No, really?
Yeah, me talking. That was so mean the other day. Can I just say, because you know this. I'm like, I was messaging Carol and I'm like, sorry, I'm in gala mode.
Yeah, she's at work.
I said, I know you're at work. I'm just totally in gala mode. And she's like, so you mean it's like every day?
Pretty much.
Which brings me to my next point.
So what was the mean part of that?
Because it was just like, I occasionally don't think about Geek Gala. Yeah, usually I'm sleeping.
Right. Or you haven't had coffee yet.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah. Because I'm like, I've seen it. Oh, yeah. Before coffee.
Before coffee. But that brings me to my next point, which I'm really excited about. You're coming back to the Muggles Market.
Falstaff Books will be back at the Muggles Market. I'm very excited to be able to juggle the multitude of events that are happening in the writing world that weekend.
I know. Yeah. I know.
Because holy shit.
Well, because Falstaff was going to be there, but you weren't going to be there. And
yes.
That made me have puppy dog sad. But
it did. But World Fantasy Con is in Baltimore that same weekend and really expensive.
Yeah,
okay. It's incredibly expensive. Yeah.
Geek Gala is in the town where I live.
Yeah.
And thus doesn't require me to get a hotel room unless I get shithouse drunk, which is not off the table. But even if I do, the hotel's way cheaper than the hotel in Baltimore.
Yeah, we haven't announced the official hotel, but this one's like, we're signing the contract. Like, by the time this airs, it will be signed. And
yay.
It's literally across the street, so you just have to stumble drunk.
Awesome. And frankly, even if it had been like if it was the Westin downtown, it would still be cheaper than the $300 a night.
Oh.
Gosh, Dragon Con isn't even $300 a night.
Well, $275.
Yeah.
You split it with 10 people, though. I mean.
Right. Oh, I'll also be going back to Dragon Con. I was accepted as a guest again at Dragon.
Cool.
So I'll be down there Labor Day weekend hanging out in the lobby bar at the Westin.
We haven't gotten our rooms yet because every time we call, they're full. So we're kind of waiting for charging your credit card weekend so that we can call up and snag one.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping for as well, kind of. I mean,
yeah,
we can look into that. I'm really depends on where I land this summer because I am planning on moving. So
yeah, but here, hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully.
In this world still.
Yeah, in this world. I mean, it's not like I'm going to move to Neptune.
I'm going to just have to put a shock collar on you and you can only go within like 20 miles of where you currently live. How's that?
Okay, well, except for this is like 25. So do like 25.
So she's got to move closer.
Yeah. She's got to move closer.
I'll just go to work. Oh, man.
Sorry, Labor Day weekend is the only time we change.
The break room is 10 feet past my limits. Could you bring me a tea?
So speaking of Falstaff Books, you guys have grown.
A little bit. So I know a lot of writers, and
I noticed that
a lot of them have a lot of projects.
I noticed that too.
And I'm bad about just saying, sure, I'll publish that. And then they actually write them and send them to me. So In addition to Hot Blooded, which released yesterday.
I just want to sing the song every time you say it. Maybe go ahead.
It's okay. It's going to get better. Because next week we're releasing Runaway. Which is also in the Bubba the Monster Hunter universe, but it's written by J.D. Blackrose. She writes a spinoff series from the Bubbaverse featuring Monster Hunter Mom, which features Jess Friedman, who is a Cleveland-based Jewish mother of three and a husband, so three and a half. And she's dealing with being a mom of toddler and school kids and hunting monsters on the side.
Oh, Lord.
And dealing with questions of faith because she's working for the Catholic Church. So occasionally she has to go and talk to her rabbi about working for the Pope. And after that, we're releasing Open Season by Gail and Larry Martin, which is the second of the Mark Wojcik Monster Hunter books, which is in the Pennsylvania region of Pennsylvania, where Gail and Larry grew up. So what we've done is, and Matt will recognize what I'm doing because it's what all of the comic book worlds do. You take a property and you just spin them off. You know, this is my Uncanny X-Men, and this is my Astonishing X-Men, and my X-Men Gold, and X-Force, and we've got over 100 titles under contract for Falstaff, and this is the beginning of year three for us.
That's amazing. We're in a world where so many people are not succeeding with print. You are boasting much growing sales.
We are boasting growing sales. We're not doing a ton in print. We are primarily an ebook and audiobook.
But still press. Existing.
Oh yeah, we're existing. We're doing fine. We're a small business and it's year three, so we're hoping to break even this year.
That's what you want. Just throw that mic
I'll
anywhere.
Just put
it's
that
just
anywhere.
Brand new.
Just
brand. No,
we'll take
no
it out in post.
Deal.
Don't worry about it, John.
Oh, come on. You've got a spare.
Nothing gets taken out in post.
No.
In theory.
That one, they go.
Yeah, I shot a Patreon video last weekend and I was like, yeah, I'm not editing that shit. Sorry, I fucked up. The only thing I edited was like, I had to really do a big old snuffle. Because my sinuses were driving me crazy. I was like, okay, that's gross. I'll edit that out.
Yeah.
But yeah, no.
For an
Falstaff,
extra $5, you can get the Kleenex.
The Patreon version has the
one. We could do a release every week for 2 years and still not have everything on the books. And we're debuting experienced authors like Gail and Larry, who have got dozen or more publications to their credit. Eric Asher is a fantastically successful indie writer who's also working with us now. And we're also debuting new authors. We've got several novels from new authors, including some from here in Charlotte. Elisa Hansen's first book is coming out with us. Patrick Dugan's first book is coming out with us. Melissa MacArthur's first novellas are coming out with us. So I think we've got a good mix of established professionals and new authors. And I tell everybody coming in, look, nobody's getting rich off of working in a small press world.
No.
Mm-hmm. My whole idea is I want you this to be, if you're a new author, where you can cut your teeth and learn how to do the work. And then you can go somewhere else and sell the shit out of some books. And we can all get paid on the backlist.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And that's absolutely it. But I think one of the things that is most valuable about Falstaff is that you are pretty straightforward about what doesn't fly.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you aren't just a publisher. You're somebody who makes your living off of your writing.
Yeah.
And so, therefore, you are a great mentor. And I've seen you do it.
I try.
So.
It's something that people did for me when I was starting out. I was really fortunate that folks like Misty Massey and Kalena Price and Faith Hunter took me under their wing and helped me learn the ropes. And Deb Dixon, my publisher at Bellbridge Books, taught me an incredible amount. And I feel like I owe it to those folks who took the time to help me learn how to do this to teach the people who are coming behind me. And the other cool thing about Falstaff is we've got badass swag.
I was gonna say, yeah.
He's opened up his cool T-shirt underneath.
That was his zipper unzipping, but it was the top half.
It was the hoodie.
Excuse me while I whip this out.
Where's that toilet paper roll?
Sorry, I'm way too Irish to pass that test, Maddie.
But you totally do.
So how do you find new authors? Because I know a lot of the established authors, you've just met them at cons and you get to know them and you get to drink with them. How do you find your new authors?
I meet them at cons and I drink with them. Honestly, we take submissions off our website, which is falstaffbooks.com. You can click the submissions button and follow the goddamn submission guidelines. If you send me an RTF file as an attachment, I'm just not even going to fucking read it.
Well, seriously, it's like, yeah. It's like when I was in staffing and somebody wouldn't read the submission guidelines and say
no phone calls. Don't type your resume in Comic Sans, dumbass.
Oh, my God.
Same deal. But no, we take submissions on our website, and we have purchased a few books out of slush, as we call it. But most of the stuff we buy is people I know and or people I meet and talk to. And something about us clicks, because I feel like a publisher-author relationship, it's not a marriage. It's not a lifelong commitment like an author-agent relationship should be, but it is a long-term commitment. It's, you know, kind of like an academic advisor relationship. You're planning on working together for several years. Even if we're looking at a small novella contract, we're looking at 2 years worth of work to produce three or four novellas usually. So I want to know that I can tolerate the people that we're working with. And I want to know that they can tolerate me, because you guys know me. I'm a lot to deal with. Oh.
This is true.
So
yes.
So I want to make sure that they can hang.
Yeah.
And, you know, like you said, I am pretty straightforward about what you can expect. You're not going to sign a contract with Falstaff and immediately see your books in every Barnes & Noble in the country, because the national bookstore distribution deals are very expensive, and I've seen small presses almost go under because they laid out tens of thousands of dollars to get their books in Barnes & Noble, and then they got tens of thousands of dollars worth of books returned because they didn't move in 90 days.
Yeah.
I'm not interested in that. You know, we'll make print books. We make hardcovers of all of the novel length work that we release and paperbacks of pretty much everything that we release. But we're primarily an audiobook and ebook house. So that's where the market is right now for small presses.
Cool.
And in a world of Amazon, if you want the hard copy, you can get it through Amazon.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I think that's where a lot of readers do end up shopping. So.
I mean, Hot Blooded released in print before it released digitally, just because of the way Amazon's uploads and all that works. I had it for pre-order until Tuesday, but if people wanted to order a paperback for $6, they could have ordered it last week.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And, you know, it's not... I'm building the print book off of the ebook. So, right. Which is the opposite of the way it used to be. And things are going to be interesting over the next year or so as far as publishing goes. Walmart just announced a deal with Kobo last week where they're going to stock the Kobo e-readers in stores, and they're going to sell Kobo ebooks on Walmart.com. So that's really interesting, because Kobo has been a really strong second-tier distributor outside the U.S., but they haven't had a ton of U.S. presence. And it's going to take 6 months to a year before we see any market shift because of that, so Amazon might see some competition. And competition's good for the market.
That's true.
It is. And, you know, and as places like Walmart and Target are trying to figure out their place in their world, they're going to be figuring out how they can bundle what they've had brick and mortar to what Amazon has now.
Absolutely.
Just as Amazon's trying to do the other way. So,
and, you know, hopefully they'll do better than Barnes & Noble did and make a better online shopping experience.
Oh, my God, yeah.
I mean, that's the problem with the Nook, is that the shopping experience for Nook books is shit.
It is. I have to agree. I love my Kindle, though. It's dangerous, though. It's so dangerous because I get those little notifications. It's like, this is 99 cents. And before you know it, you've bought, you know, 15 99 cent books.
Yeah, how many books are in your list right now?
Don't ask.
Yeah. I just did. I'm calling you out, Carol.
I have no idea.
But
I,
it's
I
in the thousands, I'm sure.
It probably, yeah.
I know mine is. I've got well over 1,000 books on my Kindle. And a lot of them, same deal. I'll buy it because it's 99 cents. And hey, I'll take a flyer on this for $1. Or even $2.
Yeah.
You know, I don't do Starbucks, but we price all of our, almost all our books to be less than $5 because I'm like, well, fuck it, skip a latte that day and buy a book instead.
And I have to say, if I know the author, because I'm currently listening to Steeplejack by A.J. Hartley.
Okay. That narrator is the bomb.
Oh my God. That book started, and I was like, I want to marry this voice, and I'm not even gay. Her voice is just butter.
You
oh
know
my
who
God!
She is, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Hermione Granger in the Harry Potter London
and the
show
and the
oh, okay.
and the
Cursed Child.
Yeah,
I can't remember the ending. but if I know the author, I'll pay more for it. But those 99 cent deals that I get, like little lists of this is all 99 cents. I'm like, oh, okay. Oh crap, where'd my paycheck go?
Oh yeah, by the third week of the month, because I get paid, all my royalties pay out on the first of the month. By the third week of the month, I'm like, yeah, I just don't open any of those.
Yes, it's like I can't open Facebook anymore. Book Riot keep sending me stuff.
Can't open a BookBub email. Can't open a Bargain Booksy email. Can't open a Book Barbarian. I get like 6 or 8 of those a day because I've submitted projects to them for promos. Bubba the Monster Hunter Season 1 is on sale for $1 right now. By the time you listen to this, it's not on sale anymore. But it's $5 and you should still buy it because it's cheap.
Now, I will say for our review of the Quincy Harker Year 1, I purchased it digitally, and I think it was on sale for $1.99.
Entirely like, oh, possible.
But I knew I wasn't going to get through it, so I was like, I'm going to have to do this. I'm going to do the Audible and listen to it at work.
Yeah, but the thing you can do with that is if you find a book like that that's on sale for $1 or $2 on ebook, a lot of times, and I know Harker books do it, a lot of times if you go to Audible, you can get the audiobook for a lot cheaper.
Yeah, and it was like, I think it was like $5, and I'm like, well, I'm just going to have to do this so I can finish it.
Yeah.
And so I was listening to his horrific demon hunting while at work.
Oh, a friend of mine was listening to it in the drive-thru at McDonald's, and she said, I was listening to your book at the drive-thru, and I pulled up to the window, and comes across the speakers, I will butt rape you with a dildo made from the wood of the true cross.
Oh.
I was like, I don't remember writing that, but it sounds like me. So, yeah. By the way, mute my shit when you're in the drive-thru.
I had earbuds on, so nobody was.
But I have a lot of people who will, they're either on my ARC team, so they'll get the book for free, but if they buy the book when it's super cheap for $1, they'll then go to Audible and they can get the audiobook for a lot cheaper. And I'm like, hey, I'm fine with that. It's not going to hurt my feelings because you're buying the shit and I'm going to get paid.
Yeah.
Maybe I don't get as much money, but I'm getting paid. So it's better than stealing it.
Yeah, don't steal books.
We prefer you not to steal it. Thank you very much.
Don't pirate shit. That takes some food off our table, and I'm fat. I like to eat.
Well, John, I know this is episode 198.
Yes.
Next episode's 199. Will you hang around for that?
Absolutely.
And check out John's stuff. Buy his shit.
I am going to write a book this year called Buy My Shit, How to Sell Books at Conventions.
And then you should teach a class on that somewhere.
Yes, you should. Yes.
I'm working on an online training
I'm not
program.
Talking about online.
Well, I might.
I'm talking about in person where people can come and see you.
I can be bought. You fuckers want me to come teach you how to buy shit? You come to go to johnhartness.com, hit the contact form, and send me money. I'll show up wherever you want.
Or we could figure out a place here in Charlotte and do it that
or,
way.
Or, you know, maybe sometime beginning of November or something, we could work something out.
Maybe. Or 2019 or something like that.
Yeah, 2019 sounds great. We could come up with some kind of event happening in 2019 where I could teach some shit.
Yes.
Sounds good.
Perhaps we can do that.
Yes, maybe perhaps we can. Tune in next time when John says...
By my shit.
All right.
Thank you for listening to Guardians of the Geekery. For more information, go to guardiansofthegeekery.com. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/guardiansofthegeekery and on Twitter at CLTGOG. Music used by Guardians of the Geekery, Lock and Load, and A Day in the Sun by Jens Kilstofta. Licensed under Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 International.